It's Friday, May 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hi, glad to have you with us. Coming up, the United States considers options to help Iraqi forces battle the Islamic State.
We cannot allow the reputation of football and FIFA to be dragged through the mud any longer. It has to stop here and now.
FIFA President Sepp Blatter speaks out about alleged corruption in world football. Also ahead, the U.S. Defense Secretary is in Asia and speaking out about activities in the South China Sea. Music fans are singing the blues over the death of an icon and a resulting controversy. All this coming up today on International Edition. U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter said Thursday that defense officials are looking at ways to enhance efforts to train and equip pro-government forces in Iraq as they battle Islamic State fighters. Speaking to reporters traveling with him on a trip to Asia, Carter said recent events in Iraq, where the militants seized the provincial capital of the sprawling Anbar province west of Baghdad, have shown the need for a capable ground partner. The defense chief said Thursday that speeding up training and getting equipment to the battlefield will affect Iraqi forces with their confidence in their ability to operate. Islamic State fighters recently gained an important strategic victory by capturing the last Syrian government-controlled border crossing with Iraq. VOA's Jeffrey Young spoke with Colin Clark, associate political scientist at the RAND Corporation Pittsburgh, about how this development provides a wide-open highway for the Islamic State to move men and equipment back and forth at will.
Your life. Colin Clark is associate political scientist at the RAND Corporation in Pittsburgh. The last Syrian-controlled border crossing separating Syria and Iraq has now fallen to the Islamic State. What is the implications of that capture?
I think the implications of the capture of Al-Tanf, the border crossing connecting the two countries, is absolutely immense. With control of this border crossing, ISIS can now facilitate the movement of men, materiel, including weapons, equipment, back and forth fairly seamlessly through its territory.
So people understand, this is a border crossing that connects Syria with Anbar province, right?
Correct, which is one of the areas that ISIS is currently consolidating control over. So it's not only a base of popular support in terms of expressions of sympathy for the group, but it's also a source of actual tangible support. So things that ISIS needs to operate, it gets from this area. It gets from both sides of the border, and it's now able to do so with more ease than in the past.
Speaking of border crossings to the north with a border with Turkey, what will it take to stop the influx of foreign fighters from Turkey into Syria to join the Islamic State? Is the failure on the Turkish side to not prevent people from crossing? Where does the blame lie, if there is blame to be had?
I mean, if there's blame to be had, I think it's shared blame. I think certainly some of the onus has to be on the Turks, since it is their actual border. But I think without a direct ISIS threat to Turkey, there's less of an impetus for the Turks to be as concerned. But certainly there's got to be some blame placed on Western governments that are allowing these individuals to travel abroad to join ISIS, and clearly they're linking up via the internet first and then making their way over and eventually into Iraq and Syria to join the group. I think Western governments are getting better at this, but again, it's still a work in progress, and certainly ISIS fighters or potential recruits have now figured out workarounds and ways to get around kind of Western surveillance and make their way and continue to make their way to the battlefield.
Looking back to Al-Tanf and the fall of that border crossing, now that they have an open pathway from the territory that they control in Syria to Anbar province, do you think that that is going to enable them to beef up their forces and build an even stronger assault on Baghdad?
Yeah, I think part of the capture of the border crossing is certainly beneficial in tangible terms, but I also think it's partly symbolic. When we look at maps as Westerners, there's very defined borders, and we tend to take those into consideration. I'm not quite sure that ISIS recognizes the boundary quite as as we do. And so the group looks at its territory as kind of one and the same, whereas, you know, the forces attempting to counter ISIS clearly differentiate between the battlefields in Iraq and in Syria proper.
Colton Clark is associate political scientist at the RAND Corporation in Pittsburgh. I'm Jeffrey Young, VOA News.
On our website at voanews.com, we have an exclusive interview that talks about dealing with the threat of the Islamic State group. Michael Lippin joins me in the studio. Michael, tell us more about this.
Thanks, Jim. That's right. I'd like to draw the attention of our listeners to an exclusive VOA interview with Iraq's president, Kurdish politician Fuad Masum. VOA reporter Ali Javanmardi met with Mr. Masum this week in Baghdad and asked him how Iraq is dealing with the threat of the Islamic State group. Excerpts of that interview were published today on our website, and I don't want to give too much away, but they discuss the state of Iraq's army and the roles of the United States and Iran in supporting the Iraqi government forces. Now, we tweeted a link to the interview on our main Twitter account, at VOA News, highlighting one particular quote from President Masum, who said, "Iraq will fight the Islamic State group, or ISIS, until they are killed or we die."
Wow. Was there any reaction to that quote on Twitter?
Well, there was. Several users did respond to the Iraqi president's vow of a fight to the death against ISIS, and I'll give you a sample of what they said. User Azad Kurdistan doesn't think Iraq can win such a fight, saying, "Okay, so bye-bye Iraq then." Another skeptical comment comes from Sabah Alani, who writes that a fight to the death wouldn't happen because the Iraqi army will run away. President Masum did get some encouragement, though. A user who goes by the name Shia Superpower said, "Allah is with you," and expressed hope that with the help of Iran and Shiite militias, Iraq will regain each part of the country. And then we have user Sonaria the Rose saying that killing off ISIS will definitely happen because all of the Iraqi people are brave. Well, of course, anyone can share their thoughts with VOA on this and any other story. All you need to do is reply to our tweets or post your comments on both the article pages of our website and on our Voice of America Facebook page. Jim?
All right. And you can follow Michael at Michael_Lippin. I'm at VOA Stevenson. And this is VOA.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. FIFA President Sepp Blatter says the corruption investigations into the practices of the football governing body brought shame and humiliation to the sport.
"These are unprecedented and difficult times for FIFA. The events of yesterday have cast a long shadow over football and over this week's Congress. Actions of individuals, we've proven, bring shame and humiliation on football and demand action and change from us all. We cannot allow the reputation of football and FIFA to be dragged through the mud any longer. It has to stop here and now."
That was probably not the speech he was expecting to give at the 65th FIFA Annual Congress in Zurich, but Blatter said the federation faces more bad news and the next few months will not be easy for FIFA, but it's necessary to begin to restore trust in it, he said. And he also spoke to critics of his role as FIFA's president.
"I know many people hold me ultimately responsible for the actions and reputation of the global football community, whether it's a decision for the hosting of a World Cup or a corruption scandal. I cannot monitor everyone all of the time. If people want to do wrong, they will also try to hide it. But it must fall to me to bear the responsibility for the reputation and well-being of our organization and to find a way forward to fix things.
Sepp Blatter is standing for yet another term as FIFA's president. There are only two candidates running for the presidency, Blatter, of course, and Prince Ali bin Al Hussein of Jordan. Now, two major European football associations have called on Blatter to resign before the FIFA presidential elections planned for Friday. Blatter has refused. The United States filed charges of lies, corruption, and bribery against 14 current and former top FIFA officials on Wednesday. Prosecutors say that sports media executives had paid or agreed to pay millions of dollars to FIFA officials. It's now 16 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back after a brief look at the day's news.
Here are the headlines from VOA as we've been reporting. Speaking at the 65th FIFA Annual Congress in Zurich, President Sepp Blatter said the Federation faces more bad news and that the next few months will not be easy for FIFA. The United States filed charges of corruption and bribery against the sports international governing body on Wednesday. Iran's foreign minister says he hopes his government and a group of leading nations can reach a final nuclear agreement within what he called a reasonable period of time. However, Mohammad Javad Zarif also said there will be no agreement if there are excessive demands, his words, by the other nations involved in the negotiations. The Kremlin says a new presidential decree classifying Russian military losses in peacetime as a state secret has nothing to do with Ukraine. A Kremlin spokesman also says President Vladimir Putin is not planning to launch any cross-border military operations. I'm Dave DeForest, VOA News.
This is International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter has called for an immediate and lasting halt to land and reclamation and the militarization of disputed features in the South China Sea. He spoke in Hawaii during a change of command ceremony at the U.S. Pacific Command Wednesday.
We want a peaceful resolution of all disputes and an immediate and lasting halt to land reclamation by any claimant. We also oppose any further militarization of disputed features. Second, and there should be no mistake, the United States will fly, sail, and operate wherever international law allows, as we do all around the world. Finally, with its actions in the South China Sea, China is out of step with both international norms that underscore the Asia-Pacific security architecture and the regional consensus in favor of a non-coercive approach to this and other long-standing disputes.
His comments followed a Chinese protest after a U.S. spy plane last week flew over the Spratly Islands, where China is engaged in land reclamation. The U.S. defense chief says China's actions are bringing countries together in new ways, and their increasing demand for American engagement in the Asia-Pacific. Ralph Kosa, a regional security analyst with a Hawaii-based Pacific Forum, told VOA's Victor Beatty the defense chief's remarks are nothing new. Kosa also refers to the 2002 declaration of conduct of parties in the South China Sea.
I don't think there's anything that the Chinese haven't heard before, but this was certainly put all in one fairly blunt statement and certainly forceful coming from the Secretary of Defense. You know, the fact that the U.S. wants everyone to stop essentially cheating on the declaration on the conduct of parties of the, you know, in 2002, they all of them agreed to not do anything that would change the status quo. And since then, everybody has been doing things to change the status quo. So the U.S. position has been knock it off. To me, the only sensible thing is a rollback to 2002. That's when everybody promised to behave, and they ought to be held to that promise. And certainly the U.S. is essentially saying that, quit changing the status quo, quit doing things that are making the situation worse. And it says to all parties, although obviously the most egregious has been China.
This comes after Mr. Carter created quite a stir about Iraq and Iraqi troops' unwillingness to stand and fight as they left Ramadi. Is he stirring the pot again?
He's telling the truth. if truth-telling stirs the pot, you know, to me it's sort of refreshing to have a Secretary of Defense that actually is, you know, calling a spade, and, you know, he's perhaps a little more blunt, a little less diplomatic than some have been, but I think the situation both in Iraq and here calls for it.
East-West Institute senior fellow Denny Roy says that the Carter speech is another way of saying Washington will not honor any Chinese attempt to create an economic exclusion zone or territorial waters boundary around any of their artificial islands. He says China will almost certainly not stop its land reclamation efforts in the South China Sea, and that could undermine the U.S. objective of retaining its regional leadership. Roy says it could also increase the chance of an incident involving U.S. and Chinese ships and aircraft. The state-run China Daily on Thursday said China's island construction work in the South China Sea is designed to provide better services for vessels, and it said this will help China better shoulder its international responsibilities in the South China Sea. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Blues guitar legend B.B. King died last week, and while fans continue to remember and pay their respects, like other music greats, his death has now become shrouded in controversy. My colleagues David Byrd and Ray McDonald settle into the studio to sort through what's going on.
Now it is 3 o'clock in the morning. Can't even close my eyes.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Byrd. Thousands of fans and mourners jammed Beale Street in Memphis, Tennessee this week to pay respects to blues legend B.B. King. The 89-year-old guitarist and singer died May 14th, but how he died has become a source of some controversy. To find out more, VOA's Ray McDonald joins us in the studio. Ray, what is this controversy about?
Well, you know, about 30 years ago, Cyndi Lauper had a minor hit single with a song called Money Changes Everything. And I think it's one of the most honest songs ever made, because money does change everything, especially when you have a legendary musician like B.B. King. B.B. passed away on May 14th at age 89. He'd struggled with diabetes for years. He suffered a series of small strokes. Now, even before he died, his two daughters, Patty King and Karen Williams, wanted police to investigate his manager, Laverne Tony, and Tony's assistant, Myron Johnson. They were saying that these two men were neglecting and abusing B.B. King. And immediately after his death, they accused Tony and Johnson of poisoning him.
Now, I saw an article that said that one of the reasons they've brought this dispute is because B.B. King didn't leave them very much money. He left them like $4,000 or $5,000 each.
He left them $3,000 and $5,000.
Yeah, and the rest went to an educational foundation that he founded.
Right, right. B.B. King lost his parents at an early age, and he was forced to fend for himself. And so his own education was curtailed. And so he has set up the bulk of his estate to take care of college expenses for his family.
A second autopsy has been done on his body, but it will take a while to get the results of that, won't it?
It's going to take 6 to 8 weeks. Now, initially it was reported that the Las Vegas police were investigating BB's death as a homicide. They say not yet. They will not move forward with any investigation unless the coroner determines that King's death arose from unusual circumstances. So it's going to take us a couple months to clear this up.
Do you think this is going to tarnish the memory people will have of B.B. King at all?
I don't. I really don't. I think his decades of music and performing all over the world are definitely going to outlive this very short-lived controversy.
All right, that's VOA's Ray McDonald. We invite your commentary on this. You can log on to our website, www.voanews.com. Be sure to listen for Ray's Top 5 Countdown every week as well. If you don't hear it on the radio, you can hear it on our website. Again, that's voanews.com.
You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. We invite you to stop by our website at voanews.com. On Facebook at VOA Asia, you can write to us, our email address, voaasia@voanews.com. Of course, we're also on Twitter as well, and we hope you stop by there. You can find us on our website any time of the day or night, and we thank you for joining us today. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Tracy Carter was our director, our engineer, Zubir Osman. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Neglected tropical diseases, or NTDs, are chronic disabling illnesses that thrive in areas with poor sanitation, lack of clean drinking water, and scant access to medication. The World Health Organization has identified 17 of them as priorities for action. Some of them can be effectively treated and even eliminated with low-cost medications, in many cases donated by pharmaceutical companies. Getting these medications to where they are needed has been a daunting task, since these are diseases of the poorest of the poor. Their impact on individuals and communities can be devastating. NTDs impair intellectual development in children and reduce school enrollment. They limit the ability of infected individuals to work and thrive, thus trapping them in a cycle of poverty and disease. Today, over 1 billion people suffer from at least one NTD. In 2006, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, started a program addressing the seven diseases that comprise 80% of all NTDs: lymphatic filariasis, blinding trachoma, onchocerciasis, schistosomiasis, and the three most common infections, the soil-transmitted parasites hookworm, roundworm, and whipworm. Back then, the program had a budget of $15 million to distribute 36 million treatments to 16 million people in four countries, said USAID Assistant Administrator Ariel Pablos Mendez. Today, it's $100 million and 240 million treatments distributed to 115 million people in 31 countries. The program is very successful for three reasons. First is USAID's partnership with the pharmaceutical sector, which has to date contributed $8.8 billion worth of medication. Second is USAID's partnership and coordination with the government of the United Kingdom's Department for International Development, which has allowed for a collective reach to almost 50 countries and the provision of 340 million treatments in 2014. And third, USAID's cooperation with host governments and the ability to build upon the existing infrastructure of national disease control and elimination programs. The elimination of these diseases of extreme poverty as a public health scourge is within our grasp, said USAID Assistant Administrator Pablos Mendez. USAID is committed to working with countries and our global partners to reach the remaining 800 million people who still need treatment.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.